is Nightline. Tonight, the growing outrage.
You're scared to get shot? I'll go in without of them.
As new video emerges of panicked parents outside Robb Elementary, desperately trying to save their kids during the shooting.
I just wanted to hold my daughter. If I could have ran inside and do something myself, I would have.
The new revelations about how the gunman entered the school and what we're learning about the agonizing hour of terror before Border Patrol agents killed him.
They said they rushed in and all that. We didn't see that.
Plus, the latest on Brittany Griner, the WNBA All-Star detained for nearly 100 days in Russia. Her wife breaks her silence with our Robin Roberts. Her message for President Biden.
She's a political pawn, so if they're holding her because they want you to do something, then I want you to do it.
And remembering Ray Liotta, the good fella who played the tough guy, dies at the age of 67. Thanks for joining us. We return tonight to the tragedy at Robb Elementary School in Texas, a school turned crime scene where we're learning much more about how the young shooter took 21 lives. Joining us now is Maria Elena Salinas in Uvalde, who spent the day reporting on the unsettling new details emerging since the shooting. Maria Elena, welcome to the show. I know you've been with this community all day, and it's clear there's a growing outrage among parents who felt paralyzed that day.
Definitely, Juju. Thank you very much. And as we have seen, it was right in front of this school behind me, Robb Elementary, that on Tuesday parents were desperate for answers. And today we're finding out new information. Despite what authorities said in the beginning, the gunman was not confronted by an armed guard outside of this school. He simply walked in through a side door that was unlocked. So, as to be expected, we are looking for answers. The authorities want answers. The parents want answers. The community want answers. They want to know more about the police response and also why the gunman was in there for a whole hour.
So much outrage, so much pain. And I know you spoke to one mother of one of the children who was killed. What did she share with you?
She is suffering so much. She says a piece of her heart has been broken, has been taken away. But she does want the world to know who her son, Rogelio, was.
The silence in this backyard, the most obvious sign of what's missing at Eva Dulia Horta's home, her son, Rogelio Torres.
I can look outside and my kids, they play outside, but without the brother, it's not the same without him.
Leaning on her twin sister, Eva Dulia clutches the 10-year-old's photo, Rogelio, one of the 19 children killed at a Texas elementary school this week.
There's nothing that can bring him back.
What do you want the world to know about Rogelio?
He was loving and...
He was a loving son.
Loving son, and loving brother. I'm going to miss him. He was my life. All my kids are my life, but losing that little piece of my heart, I lost my son.
Horta has three other children. Her 9-year-old son was also in the school when a gunman opened fire with an AR-15-style rifle.
He was scared. They told him to run. He was worried about his brother. Because he never came back home.
10-year-old Tess Mata never made it home either.
Every time I came home from college, she'd run outside. She'd open my car door for me. She'd be like, Sissy, you need help with the bag? She was our little helper.
His sister Faith and parents, Veronica and Jerry, today remembering the little girl who loved to dance and make TikToks.
Anywhere and everywhere, she was filming TikToks. We could be at a restaurant, she'd set down the phone, start filming. She just loved dancing, and she loved learning new things from TikTok.
Jerry was one of the many parents who raced to Robb Elementary School 2 days ago, desperate to save his child, but says he was pushed back by law enforcement.
You don't know, they just kept telling us to scoot back, you gotta get back behind the line. You know, it was just chaos everywhere. At that moment, I just wanted to hold my daughter. If I could have ran inside and do something myself, I would have.
The small town of Uvalde, Texas, is now moving from shock to grief and now anger, as questions linger and frustration grows the community demanding answers about what happened that day and what took so long to confront the shooter.
You're scared to get shot? I'll go in with all of them. Yeah, I will. Okay.
Many parents criticizing law enforcement, saying officers spent more time pushing back concerned moms and dads than they did hunting down the gunman. Videos like this one showing just how chaotic it was. It's difficult to watch these parents in so much distress.
Cuando salían los primeros niños heridos, y ahí fue donde toda la gente se volvió más loca.
I spoke exclusively with a neighbor who lives near the school and shot this video.
What prompted you to take that video?
Grabar lo que realmente estaba pasando.
How were the parents reacting?
Pues muchos querían correr a la escuela a buscar a sus hijos, pero ya para ese entonces ya había mucha policía y no te dejaban pasar.
He knows the accused shooter's family and says they tried to intervene.
Un familiar de él fue el que dijo que hablaron con él cuando estaba dentro de la escuela. Le decían que se entregara, que todo iba a estar bien, nomás que se entregara. Y él les contestó que no, que lo que iba a hacer ya estaba decidido y les colgó.
Y no
le siguieron llamar, le siguieron llamando, pero él ya no contestó.
The police response has been under intense scrutiny, and today, a stunning revelation about how the shooter got into the school with no confrontation and how he spent more than an hour inside before officers shot him down.
We want to know what happened, recreate the scene. That takes days, that takes hours, that takes time.
Investigators say this is a truck that the 18-year-old killer crashed near the school just before 11:30 a.m.
He continues walking towards the school. He climbs a fence. Now he's in the parking lot, shooting at the school multiple times.
What law enforcement says happens next contradicted what authorities had previously said.
It was reported that a school district police officer confronted the suspect that was making entry. Not accurate. He walked in unobstructed initially.
The video shows a gunman carrying an assault rifle as he walks through an unlocked side door into Robb Elementary and opens fire shortly after.
When did you notice that something was wrong?
Whenever the bullet came through the wall.
10-year-old Gemma Lopez talked to my colleague Matt Gutman. She was in the classroom next door.
I just knew that there was a shooter, so I turned off the lights. Everybody went out, under the table.
So before the bullet came through the wall, how many of those firecracker sounds do you think you heard?
I heard at least 5 or 6.
Almost immediately, the school goes under lockdown. By 11:44, officers approached the school and made their way toward the sound of the gunshots.
The initial officers, they received gunfire, but we have officers calling for additional resources, tactical teams. So during this time, they're also evacuating personnel, students, teachers.
By 11:55, parents have started arriving, demanding answers. Law enforcement says every time they attempted to enter the classroom with the shooter, he would fire at them. Sources tell ABC News the Uvalde Police Department does not have its own SWAT team and had to wait for Customs and Border Patrol to help.
I'm not terribly alarmed that there is imagery of folks that are on the outside that did not appear to be actively engaged in trying to stop the suspect, only because I have to assume that there were adequate resources close enough that we're actively engaged in trying to do that.
It wasn't until 12:40, a full hour after the shooter first made entry, that a tactical team heads into the building and eventually kills the gunman.
What I fear is, you know, what were those decision points that said, no, we have to stop. I understand that he's still shooting, and I understand that we're a potential target out here, but we have to stop and wait till we have a tactical team to do this. That is something that is outside of what active shooter training says you do. And I certainly hope that the agency has a good explanation for that.
This should not happen in Uvalde. You know, how can it happen? It shouldn't, because we care for each other and we look after each other.
Uvalde is a tight-knit, mostly Mexican-American community. So dealing with this tragedy is deeply personal to nearly everyone.
It seems like everyone knows each other.
Everybody knows each other somehow. Everybody's connected. The children are on the same team, you know, soccer, baseball.
Jose Ruiz is a senior pastor at Templo Cristiano.
We know that it's almost 80% Hispanic. Latino.
Yes.
And it's a conservative town.
Yeah.
In every way.
I would say in most.
For the past few days, Ruiz has opened his doors, offering solace to anyone who might need it.
How has the community reacted?
With questions. It's like they're numb. It feels like a bad dream. You know, that, you know, they're going to wake up and, you know, it didn't happen.
Did you know any of the families that lost loved ones?
There's a sister from this church that lost two nieces. My cousin lost his wife. There's another couple that comes to our church, but his son was able to make it through. He went through surgery and he came out of it.
Does it feel like close to you?
Yeah, they're like family. It hurts, you know. It just feels like, you know, like they're part of you.
Tess Mata's family, like so many others here, are still waiting to say one last goodbye.
The last thing I told her in the morning was I would see her in the afternoon. I just need to see her.
They say they understand just how hard that will be.
I gotta hold her. Even if it's for one last time.
And with grief comes a sad acceptance of what has happened here. For Nightline, I'm Maria Elena Salinas in Uvalde, Texas.
Our hearts are in Texas, and our thanks to Maria Elena. Up next, the wife of a WNBA star detained in Russia pleads for her return. Why she's speaking out now.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know, WNBA star Brittany Griner has been detained by Russia for nearly 100 days. Her wife, Sherelle, has remained quiet, not wanting to risk jeopardizing Brittany's safety. But after the U.S. reclassified Brittany as wrongfully detained, she decided to share their story with my colleague, Robin Roberts.
The first week, I laid on this couch and cried my eyeballs out. I was numb, I couldn't move. And then I said, you gotta get up now.
Wife of Brittany Griner, Sherelle.
This one is specifically just me and BG.
Opening up for the first time on the WNBA All-Stars detainment in Russia and the fight to bring her home.
How did you first hear the news and what was your initial reaction?
So I first heard the news through Brittany, actually. She started texting me around 2 a.m. that morning. Babe, wake up. They have me in this room. I don't know what's going on. And so I instantly text back, who are they and what room? And she's like, the customs people, they just grabbed me when I was going through and they have me in this room. She sent me a message and said, they'd rather take my phone, don't text anymore. So I'm like, just call me when you can, you know? And so that was it.
How long did it take for you to have communication with her again after that?
We're, 96 days? And the phone call never came.
But you have been able to communicate through letters?
Sporadically, you know, here and there. I'm grateful for even that.
On February 17th, video released by Russian authorities appears to show Griner going through airport security near Moscow, an employee removing a package from the 31-year-old athlete's bag. Russian state media reporting vape cartridges containing hashish oil were found, an offense punishable by up to 10 years in prison.
I know that you want to speak with President Biden.
Absolutely. I just keep hearing that he has the power. She's a political pawn. So if they're holding her because they want you to do something, then I want you to do it.
And I know that Secretary Blinken has reached out to you and has communicated to you that top priority. Do you feel that's the case?
I don't know. I was grateful for the call. You say she's top priority, but I want to see it. And I feel like to see it would be me seeing BG on U.S. soil. At this point, I don't even know who I'm getting back when she comes back.
Griner is not the only American detained overseas. Former U.S. Marine Trevor Reed recently freed in a prison swap, seen in this video on Russian state TV. Another Marine, Paul Whelan, has been in Russian custody since 2018.
Even though they're separate people, yeah. Separate roles, no connection besides what they're going through in Russia, I obviously want him back too, because you don't want anybody to be there going through what they're going through.
And she had spent quite a bit of time in Russia playing for the team there. What was her experience like prior to this?
Honestly, great. You know you are a GOAT if you can actually play in Russia on the team BG plays for. They treat them like superstars.
Has she ever, Brittany, ever expressed anything to you about that, about the pay inequity with the WNBA and having to go play overseas?
Absolutely. BG would wholeheartedly love to not go overseas. She has only had one Thanksgiving in the States in 9 years since she's been pro. And she misses all that stuff just because, you know, she can't make enough money in the WNBA to sustain her life.
Has it been comforting to see all the WNBA courts with BG 42?
Yes, but I think more specifically, it comforts BG. It lets her know she's not forgotten. Mm. And like, obviously, you know, when you're sitting over there in your country, they haven't come in to your rescue yet. I know that it makes her feel good because she doesn't want to be forgotten. She makes me go camping.
The imprisoned Griner even sending a bouquet of roses before our interview.
She had her attorneys call Lindsay, her agent, and bring me roses for today because she knew it was going to be a lot.
Through heartfelt letters, her presence has been felt amidst the pain.
How are you holding up during this time?
I'm okay because you have to be technically. You know, she wrote me one letter and was like, babe, I know you want to go down right now, but like, don't yes yet. Because every day you wake up and the fact that you're still in that reality, it is a reason for you to lose faith and to not have hope and all of the above. It gives you so much reason to go down. And I won't go down until she's back. I just won't. I can't. Every single day matters. She comes back, you know, but it's hard.
And finally tonight, remembering Ray Liotta. The Emmy Award winner, best known for playing mobster Henry Hill in Goodfellas, has died.
That's all the money that we had, Karen. I was dependent on that. Why did you do that?
Some of Hollywood's biggest names paid tribute to the star. Comedian Seth Rogen remembering working with him as one of the great joys of his career. And Goodfellas co-star Lorraine Bracco tweeting, he was the best part of making that movie. According to his publicist, Liotta was in the Dominican Republic filming a new movie when he didn't wake up Thursday morning. He is survived by his daughter, Carson, and his fiancée, JC Natola. Rest in peace. That's Nightline for tonight. You can watch all of our full episodes on Hulu. Be sure to tune in tomorrow to our special, Soul of a Nation, where we'll explore authentic, powerful stories of Asian Americans. Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, America.